This episode is supported by Pop M, a unique shop located in Littleton, New Hampshire, and by New York Mutual Trading, the premier Japanese food, alcoholic beverage, and restaurant supply specialist.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
You've heard of jalopies, you've heard the noise they make, but let me introduce my new Rocket 88.
Yeah, good morning. This is Emily Pearson. I'm filling in for the one and only Patrick Martins while sitting in his seat today.
You would think that we would get to choose our own music today.
Oh, we almost spiced it up with some old school, the original main course.
I am Patrick Martins.
That scared me for a second. I thought he just ran in.
We should have kicked off the hour with that, David. Anyway, this is the main course OG. Today is Thursday, August 9th. We are live in studio live on HRN at Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn. In studio, I have Elizabeth Greeley.
Hello.
Brandon Hoy.
Yep.
We also have Tony Butler with us.
Morning.
We have Willie and Ophelia. We might get some barks. We'll see. And Patrick and Mike are on vacation and hopefully listening live. Our special guest today is our very good friend and part of the Heritage family, Trig Brown, chef and co-owner of Wind Sun Restaurant here in East Williamsburg. So I'm going to throw it to Libby for her usual job.
Of course. So as Emily said, half her team is away, but we will carry on. We have our great guests with us, and we'll have fun without them. We have some great topics from a walk-in freezer mishap to Netflix and Burger King UK. So let's jump right in. So the New York Times reports that as big supermarkets are struggling, a new crop of local groceries are innovating to serve niche audiences and advance social causes. Though most North Americans still buy their food at the classic supermarket, with its wide aisles and seemingly limitless choices, younger customers want stores that offer what some industry analysts have come to call food experiences, with craft beer on tap, meals to go, vegetable butchers, and package-free options. They tend to shop only when they cook, visiting more than one store to collect ingredients rather than making a weekly trip to stock up with toilet paper and gallons of milk. So what do you think? Will the niche grocery stores survive? Will they outlive the big supermarkets? How do we all shop in here?
It's a good question. First, I want to, we have to talk about the vegetable butcher.
I know, I saw
that. Like, we can't just glaze over the fact that there has to be somebody who cuts your vegetables for you. Does that seem crazy to anybody else or just,
Yeah, where can you see that?
Yeah, I would like to know. Where is there a vegetable butcher?
Is there any blood or anything like that too on it? Or, you know, if you cut
is
the beef.
Butcher the correct term?
But it does seem rather indulgent.
The impossible butcher.
Yeah.
I have not personally shopped that way, but I was reading, I actually did look up this New York Times article, and I think in smaller cities that are trying to sort of, that are Brooklyn-esque, are doing more of these things. There's actually a market coming to Brooklyn. I think it's called The Fillery. I went on their website, and it's opening in Prospect Heights, and they're doing this. Bagless shopping. You can buy one egg.
Oh my
you can
God.
Buy one.
More Brooklyn than Brooklyn.
More Brooklyn than Brooklyn.
I mean, hey, we like this is experiential shopping is the way that New Yorkers shop in general, right? Like for the most part, we didn't really have these big box stores until very recently.
Right.
You went to the bakery to get your bread and you went to the butcher to get your meat. So that's just kind of the experiential idea of shopping is really just the norm, I think, for New Yorkers.
Nor the storage in your apartment or your house. You can't store much. This does seem, though, I'm wondering how long it will last. I mean, it's really based on people with significant disposable income and almost creating a market for them that I don't know if that how long that will last. I mean, I jump on
food's it new Disneyland.
It's got a little. I mean, I've always had a little problem with that kind of part of food that it's not. It's an event, not a kind of coming together. And mm-hmm. this is, I mean, our culture right now, in some ways, what I've been reading, it mirrors the late 19th century when the upper middle class had servants. Right. We essentially have servants. We just don't have them in our house.
They're called vegetable butchers.
They're vegetable butchers. And the one buy your one egg that was raised by a left-handed lesbian in Outer Mongolia, that kind of
thing. I want that egg. You know? Sounds delicious.
Wait, yeah. I like the one egg. I shop for one person. I cook for one person. Like, I cannot eat 12 eggs. Right, they will go bad. Yeah. So like,
you can buy six eggs.
Six, I know.
That's still like an option. Three.
Yeah, it's like minimum 24 eggs. Yeah.
Trey could just like throw him back. He's Popeye, actually. Yeah.
This is coming from a restaurant owner. Yeah, of course you buy him bulk.
Spinach. Sorry. Popeye.
I don't know. I think
this experiential shopping is to combat the online shopping, right?
Right.
Everyone's moving towards online. It's become such a huge popular, you know, cultural phenomenon for everyone. And I think what the stores are trying to do is say, hey, don't buy your stuff online, come to us. We'll show you a movie, and there's a, you know, strip club, and there's a bar, like pretty much just like back to heathenism. They're just like, whatever you want, just come here, come to us, and we'll give it to you. Because you see it in fashion already, like the Urban Outfitters of the world, like these big box stores, they're already starting to be like, we need a bar in here. We need, we need these things that aren't our core product to kind of get people to come into the stores, and then we'll sell them the things that they don't need.
No, I think it's absolutely true. And I think Tony was saying it, and you were saying it, Brandon, that it's also going back to the way shopping used to be, that it was not one-stop shopping. It was that you went to your local. I mean, it's also very European. You go to your fishmonger, you go to your, you know, your fruit, your greengrocer. You're shopping for what their specific trade is and their craft and their specialty.
My Saturday is shop, I'm in Mattituck like for the weekends, and my Saturday is shopping. I get up early, I go to the farm, I get my vegetables, I go to the butcher, I get my meat, you know, I go to all of these different places. That's the experience for me, because it's like, I like cooking, so I'm taking pride and I'm looking at things and I'm finding things that are like unique to what I want to do for the weekend.
And we're lucky to throw my mother-in-law under the bus for a second. She shops at all the big box stores, but she chooses between five of them. So she's like, I go to Publix for this, and I go to Harris Teeter for this, and I go to Fresh Market for this one. She's like, and then I go to the little Spanish place because I have to find all my Cuban stuff. But no, it also shows what you have access to, and it is all about access.
Right. And that, I mean, that's a great way of shopping that we do. I mean, I shop the same way. These things are a little different, like you say, for me, I don't know how it plays out in the food culture, because it's shifting the emphasis really from the food to the purchasing of it. Mm-hmm. When I go to a butcher, like my local butcher, there's nothing really grand about it, you know? I think he puts his cigarette down and hides it in the back before. But I go there.
You have to admit that there's something grand about that.
Yeah, but there's really good meats there. That's what I go for, not the experience of...
But I think in the end, that what you just said is the experience that people are trying to replicate as Brooklyn. So somewhere in the Midwest, they're like, could you please smoke cigarettes and before somebody comes in, just put it out so that we have this really Brooklyn feeling experience for people. So I don't know. Yeah. What is the experience? What are they offering here that's making people feel like this is an incredible thing to do?
I think... People like age of consumerism is kind of finishing up, right? And there's and people are just more interested in eating out, and they're more interested in investing in experiences. I've like read these sort of theories by real estate guys, and it's definitely interesting, but it gets a little bit nuanced and perverted when you start saying things like vegetable butchers and buying single eggs at the supermarket. But it's definitely just an interesting subject.
It would be great to see how it goes in the next few years. But okay, this next article is for real from Eater, and I read this multiple times. I could not believe this happened. So Eater has new information about the man who somehow ended up in the walk-in freezer at Sarah Beth's on the Upper West Side over the weekend. It was first reported that he sprang from the restaurant's walk-in freezer, swinging a knife and yelling, "Away from me, Satan." And then, sadly, he later died at the hospital. But as it turns out, the man was facing murder charges of two Boston men and was out on bail. It's still unknown, though, how he ended up in New York City at Sarah Beth. And though it has come out that he died of a heart attack, Sarah Beth issued a statement saying it's back open and grateful that none of its employees or guests were hurt. So confusing. So many different levels.
I don't know.
Is that the man screaming in the walk-in at Roberta's?
Oh, yeah. This sounds like an experiential plot that somebody made up, that they were like, we're going to give these people at Sarah Beth's an experience.
Yeah, that guy was a plant.
Planted, right? Dave knows. He was in on this one.
I see the story behind the story.
Right.
I don't know. I had so many headlines, so many e-newsletters with this headline. I could not choose this. I don't know. Poor guy. Obviously, he's not with us anymore. But how creepy to be it was 11 a.m. on a Sunday. Imagine if one of your cooks,
open it up.
Imagine if one of your cooks opened up their walk-in.
Some guy jumps out.
That guy was coming out.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
It reminds me of there was an old New York Post headline that's supposed to be the best tabloid headline, and it was Headless Man Found in a Topless Bar.
Oh, jeez. Amazing. Only the Post.
I think the Post broke this story first, too. They like
got
this that kind feel.
Of course they did. Feel. It does. It has a very Post kind of.
Well, Sarah Beth's.
Yeah.
So Netflix has launched a slew of cooking shows in recent years, and Grub Street wonders if the streaming platform will soon pose a threat to the Food Network. Netflix offers creators and talent more creative freedom and more resources. As a result, its distinctive shows stand out, while Food Network has mostly settled into a comfortable, familiar format of time competition and studio sets. I think this is really interesting to look at. What do you guys think about this?
I mean, haven't they already posed a threat? Haven't like all of these online Netflix and Amazon, they already pose a threat to the traditional way we watch.
I mean, it's already changed.
Yeah.
Not even a food issue. It's that people don't watch things scheduled. They watch when they want, and they follow particular shows, not networks. Mm-hmm.
I think it's too late for a threat. I think this is their direct competition. Yeah.
But do you think they can keep going? Food Network?
I think Food Network will have to adopt this new style. They're going to have to adapt to the new world.
I think they will. I mean, it's interesting.
Everybody else is.
Yeah. I mean, even PBS, I subscribe to Channel 13, and essentially what they become is this repository for all this BBC stuff. You get what's called Passport for $8 a month. Mm. It's not an ad for it, but it's very much they've moved to a Netflix kind of model, and I think Food Network's going to have to do that, where you can looking for things. Even this radio station is that people look at podcasts when and where they want them.
I miss those days. I try to teach my kids don't understand it. Where I'm like, when you know, you used to have to like be at 4 o'clock. Yeah. I'm going to get in front of the television so I can see G.I. Joe. Like those days are gone. My kids just like want instantaneously whatever show it is they want to watch, and I'm like, I try to be like, we're gonna watch this at 4 o'clock. You have to wait 7 minutes.
I know.
Well, then our generation, for me and Libby and Trig, was DVR, and I mean, if you had one, and then it was like you could have the multi room, so then you could trick it, and you could tape like four. If you had enough rooms in your house and you had all the different boxes, you could tape multiple. But that was even just like, it was on demand in a sense. But if you had to remember to tape it.
I mean, the first thing for me was VHS.
Yeah, me too.
Beta.
And like, you know, it always looked like crap and always like, it always ended early, right? Your tape ran out or something. Yeah. You're like, oh, I really want to see that.
Oh, the clock was slightly off.
Yeah, the timer on the,
Time was tough back then.
I stopped watching the Food Network when they like Americanized Iron Chef.
Yeah, that was rough.
What does it mean to Americanize Iron Chef?
They ruined it. All the old school judges that were super super corny and dubbed, they were amazing.
The food, real.
Now it's like a new like arena style thing with all the. It's
the only thing I think that probably will keep Food Network going, and I had read, was that they do have so many of these like competition shows, and they just run marathons and reruns. Mm-hmm. So when someone doesn't know what else to watch, or they're not, maybe they're a little more old school and they're not in the Netflix, Amazon Prime world. But I think that's just, they're hoping that someone lands on
the station. The unfortunate fact is those people die.
Yeah, I was going to say it's the older generation.
And then you're really behind the ball. And I say that jokingly, but the reality is it starts to move in that direction. Right. So if you don't adapt, if Food Network doesn't figure out a way to adapt to this, this is a real threat.
Yeah, no, definitely. So last week, Burger King UK promised to play Toto's Africa on repeat all day in exchange for retweets. Brandon or Trigg, is there one song you would play all day on repeat in your restaurant?
Oh my God.
For this?
I mean, that was a good choice, though. I feel like that's the maybe a non-offensive song that you could. I have a problem with this because, like, if you don't like that song, you're screwed. What if you come in and you're just like, I hate Toto, you know? It's like, what's
isn't it cruel just to play one song? Yeah. Forget about your guests for your employees.
For everybody.
So if you had to have, a song that would be like pleasant or a song that would be like.
I would probably play the Beach Boys, some Beach Boys song. I feel like, how could you be mad at the Beach Boys?
I think I would do When I Paint My Masterpiece by the Band, you know?
That's a good one, too.
I always hit Cahoots or one of those albums during Sunday brunches, and that's like when my staff lets me have my band moments, but I'm restricted to Sunday brunch.
Very good.
I didn't read the article. What was the logic behind it? What was the logic of...
They wanted retweets. So, it was a pure marketing.
So you punish your customer. Essentially, you become annoying if you...
They posted and they said, if we get 1,000 retweets, you know, by the end of the day, we will play Toto's Africa on repeat in one of our stores. It was something to do with the fact that, like, every few years, there's one cult... I was going to say bad, but I actually like that song. There was one cult, 80s or 90s song that, you know, makes a comeback.
What if I played Who Let the Dogs Out on repeat? Like, for a whole day.
Who let the dogs out?
Oh, my God.
Didn't Weezer just release a cover of Toto's Africa?
Yes. Okay, this is what sparked it. I definitely missed a part of the article. Yes, I must have been skimming. Thank you, David.
Which was a request, right, from
I'm not sure.
I saw the story.
Just saw the headline.
Somewhere. Yeah, I saw the story.
Typical.
Somewhere.
Didn't read the story.
Sorry, guys. Yeah. I failed you.
Weezer.
So funny. All right.
David,
so.
We need it woven in at some point. Can we make that happen?
If you didn't want to leave Burger King faster.
All right. Funny. We have a few more bits of
I hope we're going to talk about David Rodman, because you know.
Who is David Rodman? You mean Dennis Rodman?
Oh, yeah. Dennis Rodman.
David's his evil twin.
He's not the worm. He's the centipede.
We got a little Toto here.
Oh, yeah,
it is like soothing, though.
And this is the Weezer version.
It is.
Wow. Good job, Weezer. Yeah. Really kept it OG. A little hot on that snare, but...
Yeah, it's a little crispy.
I don't know. Hold on, we have to wait for the chorus. You gotta give me that.
Yeah, obviously we can't turn it off now.
We might have to just play this throughout the whole song.
Just in the background.
I hope you have a good lawyer.
We're giving appropriate credit where credit is due. This is Weezer's cover of Toto Africa.
Well, as we listen to this, we're trying out a new section where Emily takes over.
Hold
and
on,
just...
you're missing the chorus.
Okay. Here we go.
Very thick.
Yeah, that was
all right. All right, playtime's over.
Very thick.
Interesting. But this is a new section we're trying out where Emily takes over and it's rapid fire.
Well, you know, rapid fire Emily version, which is always a little long. I read that Jason Alexander, better known as George Costanza, is the new celebrity Colonel Sanders.
Yes, I saw it.
Kentucky Fried Chicken's new marketing campaign. I really wish we were video based.
I saw it.
My favorite Colonel Sanders was Norm Macdonald.
Yeah, that one's good too. But this one's really good. His arms, like, all of a sudden, it's creepy. It's very like Tim and Eric. Right? That's the name of that show? It's very creepy. His arms, like, get really long, and it's, like, oh, it's weird.
It's like Slender Man meets Kentucky Fried Chicken.
It is a weird commercial.
We will post a video of the new ad to our Facebook page.
Yes, we're going to announce this at the end, but we have a new Facebook page for the Main Course OG. Emily is running it.
Oh.
We will put this video up.
Pressure. I will put this video up after the show.
It may be our first post.
No, I post our link to our episode every week.
Do we have a MySpace page, too? Or just Facebook?
You can manage that one.
Yeah. I will.
Absolutely. Get us a lot of MySpace.
Also, I have a live journal if you guys want to follow me.
I thought
me
Timberlake
as well.
Was going to bring MySpace back. What happened?
What happened? I thought so, too.
JT,
I think
what
he
happened?
Just bought it and tabled it. He's just like, I want to save this for later.
He's just saving everything up. Napster, MySpace. Maybe he'll make a comeback.
Yeah.
I like him. Okay, my other announcement is, after 8 years in New York City, our very good friends at the Meatball Shop are finally opening a location in Washington, D.C. They are throwing a friends and family party on August 21st. Obviously, it's invite only, but, you know, if you want an invite, let us know.
Has anyone in this room been invited?
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. I mean, Patrick forwarded it to me. Can I ride on his coattails?
I guess so.
You know, Daniel Sharp was our recent guest. We should have all been invited. Also, if you listen to our show every week, you are familiar with our co-host, Mike Edison. Mike is on vacation at the moment, and he's back this weekend. He's actually been on Heritage Radio Network since the very beginning, and this Sunday he is celebrating his 250th and final episode of Arts and Seizures. In honor of this special occasion, we asked David to pull a favorite clip of Mike on his show.
David, I just pulled a recent one. Not a
recent
favorite.
One. Yeah, all right, sorry. All right, a recent.
Come on, let's work together. Come on, she's dancing, come on together. Now, people, and every other girl, that little girl's dancing. She's dancing in Roberta's. Yeah, arts and seizures. I'm gonna miss you.
All right. Two more to go, Bennett.
I'm going
to
miss you so. Woo! Where's the pizza?
Shows.
Bring on
the fastest half hour.
That sounds like a fun show.
Thanks to Dave for throwing that. Thanks to everybody at the Heritage Radio Network. Thanks to Roberta's Pizza, of course, and all our listeners from coast to coast and across the sea. Can you dig it?
I can dig it.
Don't forget, August 12th, big party right here at the Garden of Roberta's.
Am I invited?
This is going to be a garden party to make Ricky Nelson roll over in plots.
Wow.
That's our very own Mike Edison right there.
Yeah, he brought the energy.
He did his own intro. I was going to say, for all those who are around, August 12th, this Sunday, Mike is having a party here at Roberta's.
Yeah, I picked the most promotional clip I could find.
Fantastic.
Obviously.
Also, we never get Mike to jam out while he's in here. So
yeah, he doesn't jam out for...
This is a little early for him, I think.
Rooting for him going on there than we ever get.
On the first episode, he said he'd never been on radio without a drink in his hand, so...
I can attest to that, yes.
Maybe he's been spiking his coffee.
No. I asked. I actually try his coffee every morning just to see. I'm like, what's in this thing?
Is today the day?
Who knows?
I mean, he's in Ontario, I think. I've been watching his Instagram. What is going on right here? Is someone taking our photo? Yeah. Are we famous?
Yeah. Say cheese, guys. Say cheese.
Ophelia, all right, Ophelia got up for her.
Where are we in the speed round?
Where this are is we the in the speed round? Oh my gosh, I slowed down. I didn't have enough things for my speed round. No, David.
That was the end.
We're actually going to go to a quick break.
We will go to a quick break, but after we will talk to Trigg about all things Taiwanese and hear about his experience with Vice and Acton Bronson. Should be very interesting.
Action,
sorry. So take it away, David.
This episode is brought to you by PopM, a unique shop teeming with vibrant colors and awash in pop art, located in Littleton, New Hampshire. Its alternative cafe marries healthy and fresh with luscious and decadent treats. At PopM, indie brands and local artists mingle, bringing quality and hot-off-the-press style. Follow PopM at popm.nh. This episode is also brought to you by New York Mutual Trading, the premier Japanese food, alcoholic beverage, and restaurant supply specialist. Mutual Trading is the Japanese food authority, true to the heart in upholding genuine Japanese food traditions, and progressive in exploring new ways to provide innovative restaurant supplies and services. They import, export, distribute, and manufacture the top brands for retailers and food service customers nationwide. Learn more at nymtc.com.
Okay, we are back, and you are listening to the Main Course OG, recording live from Roberta's in Bushwick on the Heritage Network Radio. So it has been hot here in New York City, and I've been leaving on the weekends, but I am here
this
weekend.
How hot is it?
It is
real hot.
I am melting. But So I want to know, what are your favorite activities in the city to stay cool?
Oh, wow. Me? I get out. I just leave.
Everyone just leaves, right?
That's a really difficult question because it's very difficult. And I think if it's like any kind of water activity, it costs you like $80 when you got kids. It's like, I don't know. I don't have $600 for a day.
I just went to the Rockaways for the first time. That was not expensive. It's a little bit of a trek.
Reese Park is also great.
Yeah, I know. I grew up in New York City, and I have to admit, I always had a place to go outside of the city on the weekends, so I had never been to Rockaway. So I just went to Jacob Reese Park, and it was fun. I mean, you definitely need to wear flip-flops because the sand is hot and very wide. And, yeah, you definitely are going to spend some money on food or whatever, but you could pack your own sandwiches and make a whole thing of it. But I only liked it because it was really hot.
Mike Edison has played in the band shell there.
Has he?
He has.
Yeah.
The day I was there, a friend of his was performing. He made me go and say hi. I don't remember her name or the name of her band. Terrible plug. All right, Trig, what do you do when it's hot?
I cook in my super hot kitchen. And
it's like a sauna, right?
Yeah.
I've started rebranding things. I'm like, my apartment is more like a sauna. It's not just like so hot.
jogged over the Williamsburg Bridge the other day.
And that's nice.
Yeah, my friend forced me to do it. It was like probably the hottest day of the summer. It's terrible.
Well, you're on a wedding diet cleanse,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So is that part of it?
I suppose so, yeah. I don't know. Try to take a cold shower. I hate the heat. Sit in the AC, maximize AC time.
We'll have you back on for fun winter activities in the city, Trey. Have a good that.
Tony, besides moving and leaving.
Yeah, I know.
York.
Just, yeah. I think that's part of it. But I'm up awful. I'm up early, like at 5 o'clock. I'm usually out in Prospect Park with the dog when it's usually reasonably cool. But even now, it doesn't feel like that. It's just dripping. And, you know, some listeners may know we're moving to Portugal in September. And I think that makes the heat more annoying now. Like, there's a lot of New York things that are annoying me more than I used to.
Because you see the end.
And, you know, so it's really, it's got that. It's just been hot, you know, lugging boxes around the house and packing up all the crap I own and all that. So it's.
Yeah. I'm a trick. I think AC inside. But no, that's I guess, a cop out. Sorry, no offense. If you can be on a boat somewhere, I don't know, the ferries, like you can order a drink and
the ferry's actually
you can ride
great.
The ferry. Yeah.
Very inexpensive, a nice boat ride. There's a bar. It's not bad.
Yeah. Do they make you get off though? Or can you just stay?
They do. Yeah. They do make you get off.
Yeah, you can't live there.
you can't like just take it back and forth. They make you get off at the end and then pay to get back on, but it's like $3 a person.
Or you take the Staten Island ferry for free. They still make you get off, but they sell beer on it.
Right. Oh. But well no
all
that
the ferries
do now. Yeah. And they have the stand, which is the little thing inside of it. Yeah. So it's like but besides even beer and all that stuff, they have other refreshments on there. It's actually a very nice experience.
Wait, so they make you get off the Staten Island ferry now?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You just walk around and come back. So if you're quick, you can get back on the same boat. But it's still a nice...
Staten Island ferry is a 25-minute ride. I think it's something like that.
Yeah, you can chug a 24-ounce Modelo on the crossing.
You got it.
David, is that where you're going to be tonight? Yep. Is that what you do on a summer
David's
Thursday?
That was what I did for a friend's bachelor party one time. We did the crossing like 4 times and then went to a restaurant.
That's great.
That was it? Nothing else?
Yeah, that's it.
That's it. Yeah, right.
I hope he's happily married.
We'll see.
I hope all is well.
It's a developing story.
Yeah, developing story. No, they've added so many new ferries. There's one that goes from, now you can take the ferry to the Rockaways.
Right. Yeah. From Greenpoint. I think from now the new waterfront park in Williamsburg as well, right?
I think so. I haven't seen it. By the Domino Sugar Factory?
That's correct.
Yeah.
Where the new Roberta's
will be.
Is that true?
Yeah. Not breaking. We didn't break the news here. Somebody else broke the news. I don't know who it was.
Can you tell us a little? Can we have a little more information?
Yeah. I'm opening a new Roberta's. Very small.
Full-fledged sit-down?
It's obviously, I can't recreate this experience that's here. It's going to be smaller, more pizza-centric. We'll have other items. I don't want to give too much. I like some surprise.
Okay.
You know?
Surprise. What's the rough timeline?
They have to build the building first.
Oh.
So I don't know.
So we've got some buildings. So we've got 19, New York City permits.
19, let's say 19, okay. I think.
That's exciting.
It's very exciting. It's very exciting.
We'll have to do a field trip over there because our office is just around the corner. So this will always be our... But maybe we could do a field trip to the Williamsburg one.
Yeah, we could just like set up some microphones out there. Live on this one, live broadcasting in the park.
Oh,
David,
love it.
You in?
Yeah, sure. I got nothing going on that day.
All right.
How many restaurants are going to be in Domino Park?
I believe there's a small one in the park, right? That's already open. The Danny Meyer taco place, right?
Oh, the taco,
right?
Yeah.
That's already open.
I can't think of what it's called.
I know, just looking at the plans, that they have slotted about four of the, I don't know if she's in 100%. I don't know. I see in the articles who they're courting, obviously, but I think there's four in the whole complex that they have maybe currently. It looks like there's room for more. So I don't know. I usually, when they do these things, they usually try to get, like, you know, kind of bigger anchor restaurants to come in the hopes that it'll attract, you know, some other people to the really high rents.
Well, that's exciting. Oh yeah, exactly. It's your fault.
More rent.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
it's always my fault. High rent is definitely always my fault.
Yeah. Well, that's exciting. Something to look forward to. So now, over to Trigg Brown. He is the chef and owner of Winsun, a Taiwanese-American restaurant here in Brooklyn that serves some of our favorite food. We were there last night for drinks. Had some.
We were there Taiwanese often.
Food. Yeah, we were there often. We love it. So what is Taiwanese food exactly, and are there certain iconic dishes that we would recognize?
There's definitely iconic Taiwanese dishes. I would say asking somebody what Taiwanese food is kind of like asking somebody what American food is. It's there's definitely a melting pot nature to Taiwan, and you know, historical layers of influence that significantly makes the food unique from mainland China. You know, some people might not know the difference between Thailand and Taiwan, but you know, obviously there are huge differences. They're not the same at all. But yeah, I mean, I think to explain what Taiwanese food is, you just kind of have to understand the history a little bit of Taiwan. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of local ingredients. There's Aboriginal communities. And there's, you know, layers of Chinese and Japanese influence that have kind of melted together over time and created a really cool, unique Southeast Asian niche cuisine. I think if you think about Taiwanese food and what sort of iconically represents that, I would think of, you know, oyster omelet, lu ro fan, which is braised pork over rice, gua bao, which is the pork belly bao. You know, there's a ton of boba comes from Taiwan.
What is
tea.
Boba?
Yeah, tapioca pearls and milk teas.
What's the most popular dish at Winsun?
I think we've kind of created a little bit of like a following around our chicken sandwich. I'm not going to say it's like my favorite dish or everybody's favorite dish, but it definitely...
Is that Taiwanese or that's the American side of Winsun?
It's definitely an American, you know, mixing of ingredients, but it's you know, gee pie or da gee pie is a basically like large fried chicken, and you can get that anywhere in Taiwan. It's all over the place, and it's like you know, it's literally fried chicken the size of your face, and you know, you usually eat it out of like a parchment paper pouch you get off the street or in a chain restaurant like Hot Star. But the we just put a fermented bean curd mayonnaise on there and herbs and put it on a bolo bao, which is a, it's like a concha. It's a milk bun pastry with a separate dough baked on top that, is, you know, has a lot of sugar and, it corrugates as it bakes.
I did
so it looks
read
like a pineapple.
That in your excellent eater review, they did say it was more like a donut.
Yeah,
the bun.
Yeah. Well, I think
I don't
they're
think I realized
referring
it
to
was
the
sweet.
Nutritious sandwich.
But
they're both very soft and sweet. Yeah.
It was funny when I moved into my apartment before I had ever gone to Winsun. I was like, oh, you know, I have to check out this place, Winsun. He was like, the chicken sandwich is my favorite thing ever. So I was like, oh, so yeah. Yes, you have a lot of followers. You do have a big following around
that. Yeah, the chicken sandwich has been good to us.
So why did you name your restaurant Winsun? What does that mean?
So my business partner, Josh Koo, you know, he basically, I cook Taiwanese food because of my relationship with Josh. He's like, you know, one of my best friends. And, you know, when I first moved to the city, I'd been cooking for a Taiwanese guy. He's actually an American guy. His parents are from Taiwan, and but they identify politically as Chinese, and you know, kind of understanding that cultural nuance. Mm. Yeah, I didn't cook Taiwanese food for him. We were cooking actually Japanese food, and but just knowing and understanding that cultural nuance of his family history, it kind of stuck with me. And then when I moved up to New York, really randomly met my partner Josh at a cookout, and I think eventually we connected over Taiwanese food, but we were first just good homies, but we started eating a lot of Taiwanese food together where he grew up going out to eat Taiwanese food in Flushing. And fast forward when we got to the point where we were opening a restaurant, we decided to name the restaurant after Josh's grandfather's company.
And
it's a phonetic translation. So it's not exactly the same name, but it it's definitely steeped in some rich family history and means a lot to
What was
to
that
us.
Company? What did they make?
I think it was a textile manufacturing company. Yeah, Josh could probably speak more to that. But I've had the great pleasure of meeting Josh's whole family on our many trips to Taiwan, and they're extremely warm and open and generous and host us every time we come. So
favorite Taiwanese restaurant in Flushing?
That was my question.
Yeah. I can read your mind. You know I'm telepathetic, right?
I knew you were that.
Me fail English?
Yeah.
That's impossible.
That was amazing. This place, Josh always takes us to is it's called Baegon or Main Street Imperial.
Those are very different names.
Yeah, well, there's a few different names. I think on the sign it says Taiwanese gourmet, but it's
this is
known
why
as Main Street Imperial.
Very white Americans like myself, with not a lot of sort of anyway. This is why we can never find the best like hole in the wall kind of places. Or if someone says you have to go to this place in Flushing, it's called blah blah blah, and then that's not the name on the sign, and you walk right past it.
Yeah, well, you know.
They just don't want us.
No, I mean, I think it's, they're used to a lot of Taiwanese folks that, moved here a couple generations ago, started restaurants, and, they're feeding Americans their American version of Chinese food. And, when their friends and family come in, they cook the, they're like real food that they eat at home. So,
authentic.
There's a lot of, I know, Madam Huang has a book out called All Under Heaven, and I think she talks about her experiences in New York. Chinese restaurants are going to those restaurants and discovering that there's often two menus, one for passerbyers and one mm-hmm. for close friends and family.
I've noticed that at most really good Asian restaurants that there's usually some sort of backside of the menu where you could get some more authentic.
I think David Chang does like a whole episode of Ugly's Ugly Delicious. I almost said fuck, that's delicious.
That's Hector Bronson's show.
That's the wrong show. But they like negotiating those back menu items and kind of because basically I think the more you ask, inquire, and my partner Josh, when we order food from across the street, there's like a fast takeout Chinese restaurant, and Josh gets like the best shit. I'm like, dude, what did you order? he's like, oh, just make it for me. I asked for this and this and this, and then they put it together.
You have to know.
Yeah, you have to know. Yeah.
All right. Well, tell us about your experience on Vice.
I wanted to know. On that note, is there Roberta's secret item?
There are. Yeah, of course there is.
Okay.
I mean,
can we have one?
First
can
of all,
we know one?
Well,
a little inside tip for listeners?
Well, any pizza that you've seen or had in the past, if it's not on the menu, most likely we can still make it. If you came here and you're like I don't see the four emperors.
I ordered the bee sting.
Even if it's not on the menu. I mean, almost every single pizza. If you've seen a pizza here, unless it was highly, highly seasonal, ramps or peas or something of that nature, probably won't have it. But if it's like a four emperors, if it's not on the you can still order that pizza or the bee sting. Pretty much any of those things you could still kind of get if it's not on the menu.
Trig, does Winsun have a secret menu?
We have a couple secret items.
Mm.
Can't talk about it right now.
All right.
You know, it's hard to keep secrets if you just tell everyone.
And tell them on the radio.
Yeah.
This is recorded.
Like, yeah, totally.
Wow.
You know, and there's got to be at least 15 listeners right now.
Exactly.
Well, we got Janice, at least. Yeah.
Emily, my husband listens every week, because usually one of my parents. No, come on. That's live listeners. You know, if you listen, you might learn a little extra something for your visit to Winsun.
There we go. So, yeah, tell us about your experience on Vice and cooking.
We cooked some chicken sandwiches for one of his shows, the Untitled Action Bronson Show. And I think he really liked the sandwiches. So Mayhem Loren, which is, he's a...
Sidekick.
Yeah, I mean, I think Mayhem would consider himself...
The number one. I would probably, too. He's an incredible rapper.
Yeah. But he really liked our chicken sandwich and like shared it with Action.
He respects the fly shit.
Yeah, yeah.
How exactly. Did they find you? They reached out to you?
I think Vice reached out and they did some like New York stuff, so they would come to some New York restaurants and check out.
Oh, cool.
I think they're also both, I believe they're both from Queens, right? And I think they're Flushing fans. They're probably deep in the Flushing game.
Yeah, for sure.
They know their stuff. They know how to negotiate the back end of one of those one of those Taiwanese menus.
Yeah, I don't think they're unfamiliar to that sort of thing. But, I think they just like the chicken sandwich. And we've
was
ended
it
up,
fun?
Yeah, it was super fun. It's kind of wild. And I think that's, it's always good to change it up. And, when you're doing off-site events or...
Someone just got unplugged due to our special guests here in the studio, Willie and Ophelia. Trig, was that you that got unplugged?
They're trying to steal the light away from you. They're like, remember us.
they just want a little action. They just want a little action. Yeah. Trig, what is the greatest challenge of being a restaurant owner right now in 2018?
I think, we've been really lucky with this. We have a great team that we actually consider family. But people are hard to find, and there's a lot of restaurants. So, I think... getting the right people in the right places and, figuring out how to take care of your people and, incentivize them to stay and work with you, is definitely a huge challenge. I don't think that's ever not been a challenge, but,
it is more so now though. I think also the young kids want more experiences, right? We talked about this in the first segment, but as they cook, they're like, I'm not going to just work at one place. They want to work at multiple places to have multiple kind of experiences cooking. So on that end, it's kind of hard to keep people, especially when their eyes are already looking at like what's next on their resume.
Yeah. When I came to New York, I worked for free for months and, on multiple, occasions, and just like sleeping on couches and, supporting myself on my savings and trying to, just getting in, and I plugged into some great networks and, eventually got a job and moved up here. But, even when somebody trails at your restaurant, you have to pay them, or it's a liability. So it's like, how do you even facilitate that learning experience if people,
it's not as treasured either when there's less, the adversity kind of into getting into the game, I think is really crucial to a young chef's experience. And I think that it's almost been eliminated. I can't say it's totally been eliminated. It's still hard work, but that process of getting in to the game just doesn't exist anymore. It's almost like the doors are open for all to just come in and do it, which makes it hard to find talented people.
Yeah. But that being said, I feel like we've been, super lucky at Winsun and just gotten like a great crew of people. We have a lot, especially at front of the house, back of the house too, obviously. But we have some people that have been on since day one. And,
great!
We're over 2 years old at this point, and still relatively new. But we're just very grateful for our squad.
Awesome! And one last question: what are you working on now?
So Josh and I are opening another restaurant with our new partner, Jesse Chappelle. And it's going to be we're going to serve Taiwanese breakfast fare and milk bun sandwiches and fried chicken boxes to go.
Oh, my gosh. Yum. So a little different. So it's a little different than Winsun.
Yeah, it'll be very much on brand. It'll be Taiwanese American food. I can't not that I want to, but I can't really get away from that. You know, it's like part of my cooking style at this point, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
And you know, we think there's a lot more to offer, and our neighborhood, you know, it's only one stop away, but I feel like Montrose got kind of skipped over for a while. So, you know, we feel like there's a lot of room to provide more services to our more experiences to our
yes,
neighborhood.
Keyword experience.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's so exciting. And
tell that to David Rodman.
David. Oh, David. Well, that's super.
So when is this? In the future? When are we?
Yeah, I think we're, 6 to 9 months out on this project.
Oh, exciting. Cool.
That's close.
It's right across the street.
Congratulations.
So, yeah, thank you. Congratulations. So exciting. Well, thank you so much
for
being here.
Well, we look forward
Trey.
To breakfast catered by that new
good call. That's what we've been missing in here.
Yeah, catered. We should be only inviting on guests who offer catered breakfast.
I offered to bring you a coffee.
I know you did. Trigg did offer me a coffee on his way here. So that was it was a step in the right direction. Awesome. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you for being on, Trigg. That was great. And thank you all for listening. So we just launched our Facebook page, as we said, the Main Course OG. Check it out. We'll be posting some fun things. If you have any articles you want us to talk about, send them over. And stay tuned for Tech Bites up next at 11.
You've heard of jalopy, you've heard the noise they make, but let me introduce my new Rocket 88. Yes, it's great.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.